Welcome to Protecting Project Pulp, part of the District of Wonders Network, featuring Starship Sofa, Tales to Terrify, and Crime City Central. Everyone has a story in the District of Wonders. Come and find yours.
Come, sit. The fire is warm, and night in the Hyrcanian desert is cold. Leave your sword at the tent flap. You will not need it here. Welcome to Issue 5 of Protecting Project Pulp, the most ruthless and battle-hardened podcast in all Hyboria. I am your host, Davidos Robesonius, a humble bard of Ophir. I will not burden you overlong with the wagging of my tongue, for I know you are here to listen to a very different tale. A tale that came into the world a generation ago, first appearing in the ancient scrolls of Fantasy Fan magazine in March of 1934. The tale is called Gods of the North, and was written by one of the most stellar luminaries of the ancient realm of pulp, a mighty bard named Robert Irvin Howard. Born amid the howling winter winds of Texas on the 22nd of January 1906, Howard was a bookish child and keen of intellect. He admired the warriors of the ring, called boxers, and in later life sought to follow in their brutish ways. But always the lure of the lost tales and stories sang in his mind and called to his heart. From his ninth summer of life, he longed to be a storyteller. But he would not know success in his craft until his 23rd summer. Though he crafted many exquisite tales, stories of the ring warriors of boxing and the wild riders of the West, Howard is most noted by modern scribes as the chief chronicler of Conan. In a missive Howard scribed, he speaks thus. As for Conan's eventual fate, frankly, I can't predict it. In writing these yarns, I've always felt less as creating them than as if I were simply chronicling his adventures as he told them to me. That's why they skip about so much without following a regular order. The average adventurer telling tales of a wild life at random seldom follows any ordered plan, but narrates episodes widely separated by space and years as they occur to him. For your listening pleasure, the proud speaker of this mighty tale is Scott Couchman. This eloquent, honey-tongued rogue aspires to be a weaver of tales as well, but only under cover of night. In the harsh light of day, he crafts materials for the instruction of others. He and his family dwell in the radiant, jeweled city of the angels. Now, wrap your cloak tighter about your shoulders. Loosen your sword in its scabbard. It's cold in the wintry northlands of Vanaheim and Asgard. And raiding parties of the clans and tribes are not the only peril lurking in the ice and snow.
Gods of the North by Robert E. Howard. The clangor of the swords had died away. The shouting of the slaughter was hushed. Silence lay on the red-stained snow. The bleak pale sun that glittered so blindingly from the ice fields and the snow-covered plains struck sheens of silver from rent corslet and broken blade, where the dead lay as they had fallen. The nerveless hand yet gripped the broken hilt. Helmeted heads backdrawn in the death throes, tilted red beards and golden beards grimly upward, as if in last invocation to Ymir, the frost giant, god of a warrior race. Across the red drifts and mail-clad forms, two figures glared at each other. In that utter desolation, only they moved. The frosty sky was over them, the white, illimitable plain around them, the dead men at their feet. Slowly through the corpses they came, as ghosts might come to a tryst through the shambles of a dead world. In the brooding silence they stood face to face. Both were tall men, built like tigers. Their shields were gone, their corslets battered and dinted. Blood dried on their mail. Their swords were stained red. Their horned helmets showed the marks of fierce strokes. One was beardless and black-maned. The locks and beard of the other were red as the blood on the sunlit snow. "Man," he said, "tell me your name so that my brothers in Vanaheim may know who was the last of Wolfhere's band to fall before the sword of Heimdall." "Not in Vanaheim," growled the black-haired warrior, "but in Valhalla will you tell your brothers that you met Conan of Samaria." Heimdall roared and leaped. His sword flashed in deathly arc. Conan staggered, and his vision was filled with red sparks as the singing blade crashed on his helmet, shivering into bits of blue fire. But as he reeled, he thrust with all the power of his broad shoulders behind the humming blade. The sharp point tore through brass scales and bones and heart, and the red-haired warrior died at Conan's feet. The Cimmerian stood upright, trailing his sword, a sudden sick weariness assailing him. The glare of the sun on the snow cut his eyes like a knife, and the sky seemed shrunken and strangely apart. He turned away from the trampled expanse where yellow-bearded warriors lay locked with red-haired slayers in the embrace of death. A few steps he took, and the glare of the snow fields was suddenly dimmed. A rushing wave of blindness engulfed him, and he sank down into the snow, supporting himself on one mailed arm, seeking to shake the blindness out of his eyes as a lion might shake his mane. A silvery laugh cut through his dizziness, and his sight cleared slowly. He looked up. There was a strangeness about all the landscape that he could not place or define, an unfamiliar tinge to earth and sky. But he did not think long of this. Before him, swaying like a sapling in the wind, stood a woman. Her body was like ivory to his dazed gaze, and save for a light veil of gossamer, she was naked as the day. Her slender bare feet were whiter than the snow they spurned. She laughed down at the bewildered warrior. Her laughter was sweeter than the rippling silvery fountains, and poisonous with cruel mockery. "Who are you?" asked the Cimmerian. "Whence come you?" "What matter?" Her voice was more musical than a silver-stringed harp, but it was edged with cruelty. "Call up your men," he said, grasping his sword. "Yet though my strength fail me, they shall not take me alive. I see that you are of the Vanir." "Have I said so?" His gaze went again to her unruly locks, which at first glance he had thought to be red. Now he saw that they were neither red nor yellow, but a glorious compound of both colors. He gazed spellbound. Her hair was like elfin gold. The sun struck it so dazzlingly that he could scarcely bear to look upon it. Her eyes were likewise neither wholly blue nor wholly gray, but of shifting colors and dancing lights and clouds of colors he could not define. Her full red lips smiled, and from her slender feet to the blinding crown of her billowy hair, her ivory body was as perfect as the dream of a god. Conan's pulse hammered in his temples. "I cannot tell," said he, "whether you are of Vanaheim and my enemy, or of Asgard and my friend. Far have I wandered, but a woman like you I have never seen. Your locks blind me with their brightness. Never have I seen such hair, not even among the fairest daughters of the Aesir." "By Ymir?" "Who are you to swear by Ymir?" she mocked. "What know you of the gods of ice and snow, you who have come up from the south to adventure among an alien people?" "By the dark gods of my own race," he cried in anger, "though I am not of golden-haired Aesir, none has been more forward in swordplay. This day I have seen 40 men fall, and I alone have survived the field where Wolfhere's reavers met the wolves of Bragi. Tell me, woman, have you seen the flash of mail out across the snow plains, or seen armed men moving upon the ice?" "I have seen the hoarfrost glittering in the sun," she answered. "I have heard the wind whispering across the everlasting snows." He shook his head with a sigh. "Niord should have come up with us before the battle joined. I fear he and his fighting men have been ambushed. Wolf here and his warriors lie dead. I had thought there was no village within many leagues of this spot, for the war carried us far. But you could not have come a great distance over these snows, naked as you are. Lead me to your tribe if you are Asgard, for I am faint with blows and the weariness of strife." "My village is further than you can walk, Conan of Samaria," she laughed. Spreading her arms wide, she swayed before him, her golden head lolling sensuously, her scintillant eyes half-shadowed beneath their long silken lashes. "Am I not beautiful, O man?" "Like dawn running naked on the snows," he muttered, his eyes burning like those of a wolf. "Then why do you not rise and follow me? Who is the strong warrior who falls down before me?" she chanted in maddening mockery. "Lie down and die in the snow with the other fools, Conan of the black hair. You cannot follow where I would lead." With an oath, the Cimmerian heaved himself up on his feet, his blue eyes blazing, his dark scarred face contorted. Rage shook his soul, but desire for the taunting figure before him hammered at his temples and drove his wild blood fiercely through his veins. Passion fierce as physical agony flooded his whole being, so that earth and sky swam red to his dizzy gaze. In the madness that swept upon him, weariness and faintness were swept away. He spoke no word as he drove at her, fingers spread to grip her soft flesh. With a shriek of laughter, she leaped back and ran, laughing at him over her white shoulder. With a low growl, Conan followed. He had forgotten the fight, forgotten the mailed warriors who lay in their blood, forgotten Njord and the reavers who had failed to reach the fight. He had thought only for the slender white shape which seemed to float rather than run before him. Out across the white blinding plain the chase led. The trampled red field fell out of sight behind him, but still Conan kept on with the silent tenacity of his race. His mailed feet broke through the frozen crust. He sank deep in the drifts and forged through them by sheer strength. But the girl danced across the snow, light as a feather floating across a pool. Her naked feet barely left their imprint on the hoarfrost that overlaid the crust. In spite of the fire in his veins, the cold bit through the warrior's mail and fur-lined tunic, but the girl in her gossamer veil ran as lightly, as gaily as if she danced through the palm and rose gardens of Poitain. On and on she led, and Conan followed. Black curses drooled through the Cimmerian's parched lips. The great veins in his temples swelled and throbbed, and his teeth gnashed. "You cannot escape me," he roared. "Lead me into a trap, and I'll pile the heads of your kinsmen at your feet. Hide from me, and I'll tear apart the mountains to find you. I'll follow you to hell." Her maddening laughter floated back to him, and foam flew from the barbarian's lips. Further and further into the wastes she led him. The land changed. The wide plains gave way to low hills, marching upward in broken ranges. Far to the north he caught a glimpse of towering mountains, blue with the distance or white with the eternal snows. Above these mountains shone the flaring rays of the Borealis. They spread fanwise into the sky, frosty blades of cold flaming light, changing in color, growing and brightening. Above him the skies glowed and crackled with strange lights and gleams. The snow shone weirdly, now frosty blue, now icy crimson, now cold silver. Through a shimmering icy realm of enchantment, Conan plunged doggedly onward, in a crystalline maze where the only reality was the white body dancing across the glittering snow beyond his reach, ever beyond his reach. He did not wonder at the strangeness of it all, not even when two gigantic figures rose up to bar his way. The scales of their mail were white with hoarfrost, their helmets and their axes were covered with ice, snow sprinkled their locks, in their beards were spikes of icicles. Their eyes were cold as the lights that streamed above them. "Brothers," cried the girl, dancing between them, "look who follows. I have brought you a man to slay. Take his heart that we may lay it smoking on our father's board." The giants answered with roars like the grinding of icebergs on a frozen shore and heaved up their shining axes as the maddened Cimmerian hurled himself upon them. A frosty blade flashed before his eyes, blinding him with its brightness, and he gave back a terrible stroke that sheared through his foe's thigh. With a groan, the victim fell, and at the instant Conan was dashed into the snow, his left shoulder numb from the blow of the survivor, from which the Cimmerian's mail had barely saved his life. Conan saw the remaining giant looming high above him like a colossus carved of ice, etched against the cold, glowing sky. The axe fell to sink through the snow and deep into the frozen earth as Conan hurled himself aside and leapt to his feet. The giant roared and wrenched his axe free, but even as he did, Conan's sword sank down. The giant's knees bent as he sank slowly into the snow, which turned crimson with the blood that gushed from his half-severed neck. Conan wheeled to see the girl standing a short distance away, staring at him in wide-eyed horror, all the mockery gone from her face. He cried out fiercely, and the blood drops flew from his sword as his hand shook in the intensity of his passion. "Call the rest of your brothers," he cried. "I'll give their hearts to the wolves. You cannot escape me." With a cry of fright, she turned and ran fleetly. She did not laugh now, nor mock him over her white shoulder. She ran as for her life, and though he strained every nerve and thew until his temples were like to burst and the snow swam red to his gaze, she drew away from him, dwindling in the witch fire of the skies, until she was a figure no bigger than a child, then a dancing white flame on the snow, then a dim blur in the distance. But grinding his teeth until the blood started from his gums, he reeled on, and he saw the blur grow to a dancing white flame, and the flame to a figure big as a child, and then she was running less than 100 paces ahead of him, and slowly the space narrowed, foot by foot. She was running with effort now, her golden locks blowing free. He heard the quick panting of her breath and saw a flash of fear in the look she cast over her white shoulder. The grim endurance of the barbarian had served him well. The speed ebbed from her flashing white legs. She reeled in her gait. In his untamed soul leaped up the fires of hell she had fanned so well. With an inhuman roar, he closed in on her, just as she wheeled with a haunting cry and flung out her arms to fend him off. His sword fell into the snow as he crushed her to him. Her lithe body bent backwards as she fought with desperate frenzy in his iron arms. Her golden hair blew about his face, blinding him with its sheen. The feel of her slender body twisting in his mailed arms drove him to blinder madness. His strong finger sank deep into her smooth flesh, and that flesh was cold as ice. It was as if he embraced not a woman of human flesh and blood, but a woman of flaming ice. She writhed her golden head aside, striving to avoid the fierce kisses that bruised her red lips. "You are cold as the snows," he mumbled dazedly. "I will warm you with the fire in my own blood." With a scream and a desperate wrench, she slipped from his arms, leaving her single gossamer garment in his grasp. She sprang back and faced him, her golden locks in wild disarray, her white bosom heaving, her beautiful eyes blazing with terror. For an instant he stood frozen, awed by her terrible beauty as she posed naked against the snows. And in that instant she flung her arms toward the lights that glowed in the skies above her and cried out in a voice that rang in Conan's ears forever after, "Ymir, O my father, save me!" Conan was leaping forward, arms spread to seize her, when a crack like the breaking of an ice mountain, the whole skies leaped into icy fire. The girl's ivory body was suddenly enveloped in a cold blue flame so blinding that the Cimmerian threw up his hands to shield his eyes from the intolerable blaze. A fleeting instant, skies and snowy hills were bathed in crackling white flames, blue darts of icy light and frozen crimson fires. Then Conan staggered and cried out. The girl was gone. The glowing snow lay empty and bare. High above his head, the witch lights flashed and played in a frosty sky gone mad, and among the distant blue mountains there sounded a rolling thunder, as of a gigantic war chariot rushing behind steeds whose frantic hooves struck lightning from the snows and echoes from the skies. Then suddenly the Borealis, the snow-clad hills, and the blazing heavens reeled drunkenly to Conan's sight. Thousands of fireballs burst with showers of sparks, and the sky itself became a titanic wheel which rained stars as it spun. Under his feet, the snowy hills heaved up like a wave, and the Cimmerian crumpled into the snows to lie motionless. In a cold, dark universe whose sun was extinguished eons ago, Conan felt the movements of life, alien and unguessed. An earthquake had him in its grip and was shaking him to and fro, at the same time chafing his hands and feet until he yelled in pain and fury and groped for his sword.
"He's coming to, Horsa," said a voice. "Haste! We must rub the frost out of his limbs if he's ever to wield sword again."
"He won't open his left hand," growled another. "He's clutching something."
Conan opened his eyes and stared into the bearded faces that bent over him. He was surrounded by tall, golden-haired warriors in mail and furs.
"Conan, you live!"
"By Kramnjord," gasped the Cimmerian. "Am I alive, or are we all dead and in Valhalla?"
"We live," grunted the Aesir, busy over Conan's half-frozen feet. "We had to fight our way through an ambush, or we had come up with you before the battle was joined. The corpses were scarce cold when we came upon the field. We did not find you among the dead, so we followed your spoor. And Ymir's name, Conan, why did you wander off into the wastes of the north? We have followed your tracks in the snow for hours. Had a blizzard come up and hidden them, we had never found you by Ymir." "Swear not so often by Ymir," uneasily muttered a warrior, glancing at the distant mountains. "This is his land, and the god bides among yonder mountains, the legends say."
"I saw a woman," Conan answered hazily. "We met Bragi's men in the plains. I know not how long we fought. I alone lived. I was dizzy and faint. The land lay like a dream before me. Only now do all things seem natural and familiar. The woman came and taunted me. She was beautiful as a frozen flame from hell. A strange madness fell upon me when I looked at her, so I forgot all else in the world. I followed her. Did you not find her tracks? Or the giants in icy mail I slew?"
Njord shook his head. "We found only your tracks in the snow, Conan."
"Then it may be I am mad," said Conan dazedly. "Yet you yourself are no more real to me than was the golden-locked witch who fled naked across the snows before me. Yet from under my very hands she vanished in icy flame."
"He is delirious," whispered a warrior.
"Not so," cried an older man, whose eyes were wild and weird. "It was Atali, the daughter of Ymir, the frost giant. To the fields of the dead she comes, and shows herself to the dying. Myself, when a boy, I saw her when I lay half slain on the bloody field of Wolraven. I saw her walk among the dead in the snows, her naked body gleaming like ivory, and her golden hair unbearably bright in the moonlight. I lay and howled like a dying dog because I could not crawl after her. She lures men from stricken field into the wastelands to be slain by her brothers, the ice giants, who lay men's red hearts smoking on Ymir's board. The Cimmerian has seen Atali, the frost giant's daughter.
Bah, grunted Horsa. Old Gorm's mind was touched in his youth by a sword cut on the head. Conan was delirious from the fury of battle, and look how his helmet is dinted. Any of those blows might have addled his brain. It was an hallucination he followed into the wastes. He is from the south. What does he know of Atali?
You speak the truth, perhaps, muttered Conan. It was all strange and weird by Crom.
He broke off, glaring at the object that still dangled from his clenched left fist. The others gaped silently at the veil he held up, a wisp of gossamer that was never spun by human distaff.
And thus concludes Gods of the North by Robert E. Howard, narrated by Scott Couchman. For many of us who are fans of the sword and sorcery branch of the literary tree, Howard holds a special place in our hearts. I remember very distinctly the first fantasy book I read was Tolkien's The Hobbit. The second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth fantasy books I read were Conan. Howard considered Conan to be one of the most authentic characters of all his stories, and in spite of the fantastical trappings, I have to agree with him. I mean, there's so much to admire about that black-maned Cimmerian. He was completely without deception or guile, and he was the best at what he did. But the thing that draws me back to these stories time and again is Conan's indomitable spirit. Once he set his mind to something, nothing would stop him from striving for it. I think that, above all else, is a quality that, if we could cultivate it in ourselves, would lead to a lot more dreams coming true out there in the world. Now, friends, I had a chance to sit down once again with Jason Carney, a graduate student, getting his PhD in pulp fiction, oh yeah, baby, and asked him to share some of his thoughts and insights into Howard and his life. So I'm back on the mic with Jason Carney. So Robert E. Howard, I mean, the true fans of Conan will recognize the name, but he didn't write just Conan stories, right?
Oh, no. He was a very prolific pulp writer. He published in multiple genres. He did fight stories. He did comic westerns. He's not just a sword and sorcery writer. It would definitely be more appropriate to call him just a pulp writer, because the Conan the Barbarian stories were just like a small blip on his entire pulp output.
Really?
There's a really great biography written about Robert E. Howard by Mark Finn called Blood and Thunder. And a lot of what he's doing in that biography and looking at Howard's work is trying to be like, hey, you know, Howard wrote all sorts of stuff, not just sword and sorcery. He actually says he's probably more of a Western writer than a fantasy writer.
Really? So the larger volume of work that Howard put out is Westerns?
Or just kind of male's adventure stories set in like a frontier tradition, you know?
Okay.
Because he published in so many different pulp magazines, and that was most of the vast majority of pulp magazines. That was their genre. Every time you talk about Howard, you have to worry about the myth of Robert E. Howard versus Robert E. Howard, the real man. He's an extremely interesting person. His biography, if anyone gets a chance to look into it, is so intriguing. I mean, the way his life ended, you know, suicide, automatically suggests this kind of troubled artist character.
Right.
But the impression I've got from reading about Howard is that near the end of his life, he was starting to consider himself to be an artist. And he actually wanted to write a story about the frontier and take a crack at like writing what we might consider literary fiction.
Okay.
But for the course of his pulp writing career, I think he was pretty casual about it. He was H.P. Lovecraft's apprentice.
Really?
He looked up to H.P. Lovecraft as a mentor. They had an extremely prolific correspondence. It's actually, I think it's one of the most important literary correspondences in the 20th century between two writers talking about their craft and their philosophical views that hasn't been really looked at.
That would be fascinating. Is that documented anywhere?
The details of the publication of the letters back and forth, I'm not completely sure. I hope there's an anthology out there that details their correspondence. I know that the letters exist. Mark Fenn, he would know precisely like where these letters are, you know, sure, the scope of their letter.
Yeah. Something like that. And friends, if there's any of you out there listening to this who happen to have the answer to this particular question, please leave a comment in the post or up on the forums, the Protecting Project Pulp forums. We'd love to hear more about this. Friends, we hope you enjoyed Gods of the North and our conversation with Jason Carney. And we want to thank Jason for making the time and sharing some intriguing perspectives into Howard's life. Protecting Project Pulp may not be a relentless Cimmerian warrior, but there are several dangerous characters who make this podcast possible. Our assistant editor, Fred Heimbau, is a fierce Hyrcanian horseman who scours all of Hyboria, from mysterious Katai to dangerous Zingara, always on the trail of fugitive pulp tales to bring to justice and to the podcast. Sound editor Tom O'Dwyer is actually a dark Stygian wizard who traffics with foul nether creatures in exchange for the power to control sound, drawing forth sweet harmonies that ensorcel and ensnare the hearts of men. And then there's our editor and producer, Tony Smith, a lion of Nemedia, fierce and proud, a mighty and cunning general leading us all to fortune and glory. Well, glory, anyway. If you want to stay on top of all the latest from Protecting Project Pulp, there's no need to brave the horrors of an ancient temple or fend off Zamoran raiders. Just subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or on our website, www.protectingprojectpulp.com. While you're there, leave a comment on the post or in the forums. And you can also find us amid the cloud-capped towers of Facebook at facebook.com/protectingprojectpulp. Next week, we'll have a marvelous tale of daredevil flyers and their winged chariots in a story by author Jay Burks titled Flying. Until then, I'm Dave Robison, your host for Protecting Project Pulp, and I'll leave you with this thought. The spirit of the barbarian is fierce, not because it's uncivilized, but because it is unblunted by the fears and limitations imposed by civilization. The heart of Conan beats in all of us. I'll look for you next week. This presentation has been brought to you by the District of Wonders Network, dedicated to podcasting the finest genre fiction. You can learn more about the District of Wonders and their many literary productions at their website, www.districtofwonders.com. Thank you for listening.